Blog Talk Radio.
Nice 13-point week in our pick'em where you're sitting there with 8 points and falling further and further behind. So I'm good.
Yeah, you know, it was funny because I knew you were going to – you already warned me that you were going to start the show with that, and I was actually ready for it. And I thought about chitting you off at the pass, but I let you have your time in the sun. That's how much I respect you, Ryan. I'm letting you have your time here. And but
well, I just want to know how you thought Oakland was going to win in Arrowhead on Thursday night. That, I mean, that was just an omen for the week you were about to have after that.
Right. Well, we had this out on Twitter, and when you called me out on Oakland and Arrowhead. But you know, honestly, I really did have some faith in Derek Carr, and maybe it was a little bit of self interest because he was my starting quarterback in some of my fantasy football leagues, which I did survive, by the way. Despite his very poor performance, so kudos to everybody else on my team. But all right, so I'm glad you got that out of your system now. I'm glad you managed to take your shot here. I cannot be in any better mood right now, anyway, because of the fact that tomorrow we got Star Wars. So it doesn't really matter to me what you do today, Ryan. You can have at it. You know, we got little fighting going on. This is going to be great. I'm absolutely on cloud nine. But anyway, we got tons to talk about this week. And quite frankly, you know, because of the fact that there's so much going on, we're actually going to have a slightly longer edition. And we're going to try and cover a little bit about fantasy football here as well. Because, you know, quite frankly, that was a very – that was a popular segment last week. We did something new, and it worked out really well. And I think we're going to continue doing that. But this week, just to save all your listeners a little time, we're going to do it all in one. So let's just get right to it and get to the news and the game. So first up is going to be the game that I know Ryan wants to talk about more than anything, and that's the Baltimore Ravens, who are 7-6 now, at the New England Patriots, who are now 11-2, and the Patriots pull it out 30-23. That actually is a little bit misleading because the game flow was very interesting in that particular game. The Patriots jumped out to an early lead, had a 16-3 lead going into the half. Baltimore did manage to battle its way back, but then fell a little bit short when Tom Brady said, well, that's enough of that, and decided to hit Chris Hogan for a 75-yard touchdown in the fourth quarter to pretty much seal things against the Baltimore Ravens. So tell me, Ryan, what are your takeaways from the Baltimore Ravens-New England Patriots game? I know that this has a lot of implications for the Ravens specifically and their ability to make the postseason, but how do you see this impacting the Patriots?
Yeah, so I'll start with two non-team notes, but just kind of generalities I got out of the game. So I think I read that was the highest-rated Monday Night Football game since 2013.
Wow.
Which I've seen some people claiming that means that the NFL is back. I would attest that it is to the fact that when you put on a good game, people will actually watch. And the Monday Night Football games have just been awful this year. So I don't think it's as much, that football's back as it was just that was such a great matchup going into that game. So that was one thing I wanted to note. Secondly, I think it's my favorite rivalry right now in the NFL. There's a lot of hatred between the coaches and, Belichick and Harbaugh at once were, Belichick actually recommended Harbaugh for that job. But there's no love between the two franchises these days. So. That was exciting. That was great. And I would say as far as the game goes, though, the score doesn't do it justice. The Baltimore Ravens did not deserve to be on that field with the Patriots on Monday night. It was a blowout. If it weren't for God, I don't know if you want to get me started on the Cyrus Jones rant, but it's just not that hard to stay the F away from the ball. The most frustrating part was there was actually a punt earlier in the game that he did the same thing. He gave the Peter call, which is waving everybody off. and you can hear him on the TV on Peter, and then he's running alongside the ball and it almost hits him. And it's like, so you see that and you're like, all right, they got to get him away from there. But not only did they not get him away from there, it appears that they didn't even talk to him about it, because he comes out there and does it later in the game and turns over the ball at the four-yard line. And that just shows what a mental mess he is right now. He's so afraid of doing the wrong thing. You can actually see his thought process out there, that he starts to do something and then he stops and he starts another thing and he stops, and he's so second-guessing himself that even something as simple as waving everybody off the ball he can't handle. So that was frustrating. But I thought the Pats defense was great this game. I thought they had a lot of energy. They're playing with a lot of focus right now and a lot of energy, and they're hitting hard. And the trade for Kyle Van Noy has seemed to really work out. He's actually pretty much taken over all of Alandon Roberts' snaps, who everyone thought was going to be Jamie Collins' replacement. But it appears that Van Noy is kind of in that replacement out there with Shea McClellan. I tweeted this at you. I don't remember if you tweeted me back, but God, I hope that hurt you a little bit to watch him make that play on Monday night. It was, overall, I thought they played a dominating game. On the Ravens side of the ball, 41 out of 52 pass attempts for Joe Flacco were thrown to guys either behind the line of scrimmage or within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. And the Pats' weakest spot on defense is the second and third corner. So, awful game plan. I'm drawing a blank on the offensive coordinator's name off the top of my head, but he's an Andy Reid disciple, and that was straight out of the 2000 to 2005 Eagles playbook. It looked like in the sense of urgency on the last drive of the game, or their second to last drive. It looked like the Eagles in 2004 in the Super Bowl when Donovan McNabb was sucking wind between plays. It was just, you got the ball back with 10 minutes, and it took you 8 minutes to go get a field goal. I think the Ravens left a lot to be desired, but I'm not taking anything away from the Patriots. I thought that was a great win.
Well, how about the Kenneth Dixon, though? So I have to say the one player on the Ravens side that actually impressed me was Kenneth Dixon. He was getting a lot of yards after contact. He didn't have a lot of opportunity. From what I understand, it was actually the lowest number of carries in an NFL game in the first half of any game this year. So they certainly did not go ground heavy, and they had to get into catch-up mode right away. But when I saw Kenneth Dixon carry the ball, I saw him making contact and really churning his legs out and really trying hard, something I see lacking in a lot of the Ravens players. What do you think about Kenneth Dixon?
Yeah, he looks good. He was impressive. He's the perfect Baltimore Ravens-type running back, small in height, but he's just like a little power ball. And there were multiple times, even times where he wasn't even gaining more than like a yard. I forget, there was one play specifically. He ran off the left tackle, and he had two guys stack him up right by the sideline. And he only ended up gaining about a yard, but they went about 7 yards lateral to the side. And they were on both the Pats defenders were on the other side of him, and he just drove them back and out of bounds because he just wouldn't go down. So the leg drive and the strength on him is definitely amazing. And he's got he has decent speed, so. I think next year he'll be probably a good option to be their number one back going forward.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, it's pretty clear that there are others they've tried at that position this year have not been successful. One of which, Justin Forsett, actually popped up in another game this week, and in his first carry fumbled the ball, so that was very, very exciting for Justin Forsett. But he ended up looking actually okay out there. But let's go ahead and stick with this game for a second. You know, what does this mean for the Baltimore Ravens to you? Do you think they actually have a shot at the postseason still, or do you think there's going to be some issues here that have been exposed by this showdown with the Patriots on Monday Night Football?
Yeah, I think they still have a shot. That defense is a good defense. I think historically Brady has a hard time against their defenses, but I think the Pats are just locked in. The emergence of Malcolm Mitchell right now makes him really, really hard to defend because he's kind of replaced the production of Gronk. I know everyone thinks the Steelers turned a corner, but people forget the Steelers team is a bad road team. I've gone back and forth several times in our Pick'em League this week on whether or not I'm taking Cincy at home to upset Pittsburgh. Because Pittsburgh has shown us multiple times this year, like they did in Philadelphia, I forget one of the other big road games, the Miami game, they are perfectly capable of going on the road and putting up a three-point stinker because they've shown they can do it. So I'm not sold that Pittsburgh's turned the corner is going to run away with the division. So I think the Baltimore Ravens are still very much in this. They don't have an easy road the last couple weeks, but I like their chances to still contend for the NFC North.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think they still have what it takes, and they actually do have a solid defense. I mean, the problem is that they're playing Tom Brady, and that obviously is a challenge. And we'll see how Tom holds up coming into against Denver, actually the most dominant defense against the pass in the NFL. It'll be very interesting to see what they do there. I suspect that we'll see a lot of ground game, a lot of LeGarrette Blount against the Denver Broncos, because they've been exposed on the ground several times this year, and Tom Brady might not have to do that much in order to pull out the win. But it's interesting, and I think that Baltimore does have a solid defense to build on, and I think they have some potential going forward. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to our next game, and I'm going to have to ring the bell here, and that is the Seattle Seahawks at the Green Bay Packers. The Seahawks now 8-4-1 after that horrendous loss to the now 7-6 Packers. They lose 10-38. That even sounds too close. If you watched the game, you probably thought it was going to be 100-0 because Russell Wilson, in the first 12 weeks of the season, had a total of 5 interceptions, and he doubled that total this week against the Packers. Yes, he threw 5 interceptions. So one touchdown, 240 yards. It was a terrible showing by everybody in Seattle. And what we thought was going to happen to Seattle after Earl Thomas went out was that they'd be exposed over the middle. We didn't think they'd be exposed all over the place. They end up letting Aaron Rodgers stomp all over them. 3 touchdowns, 246 yards in just basically 3 quarters. So tell me, what are your thoughts about this game, Ryan? Does this mean that the Seahawks defense is completely done, that Earl Thomas was much more important than we thought, or is it just the Packers actually hitting their stride late in the season?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's a little bit of both. I mean, me and you talked about it last week, and I don't think it's a stretch to say that, I think Michael Bennett might be the most dominating player on that defense, and Richard Sherman gets a lot of the press for his mouth, and Cam Chancellor for the hits gets a lot of attention, but I think silently the leader and the most important person on that defense is Earl Thomas. So I knew that we knew from a game perspective, from a pure just coverage schemes perspective, that the Earl Thomas loss would hurt him over the middle. But he sets a lot of coverages. I mean, he's the captain of that secondary. You know, he's the guy who runs it all. So it's not surprising that is a huge loss. And I think I said it as strongly like this the last weekend, and if I didn't, then forgive me because I meant to, that I think it severely hurts their chances to win the NFC now. I think Earl Thomas is about the most devastating loss they can have on that team. And I think we saw that come to fruition. With that said, I also think I don't know that anyone's really playing hockey, football any better, or quarterback specifically any better than Aaron Rodgers right now. The last 3 or 4 weeks, he has been on a one-man mission there to get things turned around. And Ty Montgomery has turned into a bit of a weapon. And Jordy seems to be coming back more and more each week. So, from that injury from last year. So I think the Packers are playing good football right now. And so the Seahawks trying to adjust to life after Earl Thomas ran into a hot team. And it was kind of a dangerous combination. And the Seahawks are like the Pittsburgh Steelers, perfectly capable like they did in Tampa Bay a couple weeks back, of going on the road and laying up a big turd. So,
yeah. So let me ask you a question, because he didn't get a chance to really show it in this game, but I thought Thomas Rawls looked like he was relatively effective on the ground. I thought he actually had a good basically 2.5 quarters. They kind of went away from him when Collins and started doing other things like running Lockett and stuff later in the game to try to mix it up. But he was actually pretty effective, 12 attempts, 67 yards, looked pretty solid. If this was an actual regular game flow, I think he would have been pretty successful here against weak Green Bay Packers run defense. What do you think about Thomas Rawls? Is he the real thing now that he's back from injury and then got a couple games under his belt?
Yeah, I think he's looked good in those couple of games. You know, they got away from him with trick plays and stuff, and they were also, kind of getting their doors blown off. So, it's only so long you can, can take the 4 yards per play kind of deal before you have to start, trying to match touchdown for touchdown. So, I don't think that his final stat line really shows how effective he was. I thought he was very effective in that game. And I think he could be a good, an every down back going forward in the years to come for them.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually think that, and you mentioned this, that Ty Montgomery actually might make the conversion well to running back. Because I suspect that Eddie Lacy, when he gets better after his surgery and does his next regimen of P90X, which he says he will be doing in the off season, I think that there's no reason for them to bring him back. Well, look at that. Looks like we got extra sound. That is totally not supposed to be there, but that was actually some game sounds from the Falcons and the Rams, which we're going to go to next. So anyway, the fact of the matter is that I think that Ty Montgomery is actually pretty solid. I think he's going to be really good going forward as an actual running back. I know he was more of a big target over the slow wide receiver, but a big target. I think he's going to convert well to being a running back. So, you know, I totally agree with the fact that Ty Montgomery is going to be good here, and I think that they have found something. All right, so let's go ahead and hit the bell. And the important thing to keep in mind is that the Seattle Seahawks do get a chance to bounce back this Thursday night against the L.A. Rams, our favorite whipping boy of the NFL. And what I was going to say about the L.A. Rams is that, well, our favorite coach is no longer a coach, and that's Jeff Fisher. He's one game short of being the all-time losingest coach of the NFL history. He manages to tie the record but not surpass it. Honestly, he would have been guaranteed to surpass it this following week when they played Seattle on a short week. But let's go ahead and talk about the Atlanta Falcons and the Rams, because what a mess this was. What an absolute mess. So first of all, I want to ask you a question here, Ryan, about this game. Do you think that the Atlanta Falcons are actually back on track now? You know, they are now 8-5. They obviously took care of business against the Rams, which are terrible. But do you think they're actually legit and back on track? Or do you think that it's just the Rams are that bad that anybody will look good against them?
I think the Falcons are playing well right now. But my favorite turn of phrase that I probably overuse in my everyday life is that if you do the rain dance long enough, eventually it's going to rain. So I'm going to keep saying that Matt Ryan's going to choke it away at some point this year until he does, because eventually I'll be right. So I'm still not buying in on the Falcons. I think that the Vic Beasley emergence is what's really sparked that team, because now they have some semblance of a defense. And even if they're not a shutdown defense, they have a lot of playmakers on defense, which is have to be a team that can turn over the ball and score touchdowns if you're not going to be a defense that doesn't allow anybody to do anything. And so they've kind of become that, which is, I think, really aided them, because the offense has always been explosive. But, you know, the funny stat that I'm sure everybody's heard by now, it's Wednesday, but, you know, the Falcons scored 6 touchdowns in L.A. on Sunday, which is one more than the L.A. Rams have scored all year at home. The Rams just suck. You know, they're so bad. And I mean, you saw some flashes, and I think you saw some rookie bumps and bruises for Carson Wentz. But I think it's obvious now that he was the better draft choice. And hell, obviously Prescott is better. So out of the three main guys that were drafted, you know, Goff is the one that looks like he has no idea out there.
Yeah, well, you know, not only does – and everyone thought that Goff would have a little bit more of a learning curve, but quite frankly, the Rams haven't given him anything to work with. But they do have Todd Gurley, and he has been absolutely horrendous this year. You know, I mean, we thought that having a guy like that in the backfield would allow you some time and opportunity to make plays downfield, but it is absolutely not the case. He's averaging well under 3 yards per carry. Is absolutely a disaster. It doesn't look good at all. What do you think about Todd Gurley? I mean, is he really their running back of the future now, or is this time for the Rams, now that they've managed to get rid of Jeff Fisher, to just blow it all up, start over from scratch?
Yeah, so I'm not ready to say that he's Trent Richardson, but I just think, and we've talked about this several other times this year, that I think it comes down to, and I'm sure there's Pro Football Reference probably some way I can go find and break down the stats. Someone feel free to tweet it at me, at Ryan Whitfield, any. But I have to imagine at least 3/4 of the time they're facing 8 men in the box, because I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how more expansive your game plan has to be. If Case Keenum and Jared Goff, who stares down the rush, only 2 quarterback options, and Kenny Britt is your number one receiver, because Tavon Austin's just gone in the tank the last couple of years. He's no longer somebody I have any hope for. If I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm stacking 8 in the box and laughing and say, okay, beat me, because you're not going to run the ball today. And I don't care how good the running back is, you know, if you have no semblance of a passing game, it is completely easy to shut down the run. So I'm still not writing off Todd Gurley. I think I used this reference last week, but if you put Todd Gurley behind that Dallas Cowboys offense line or on that offense, I think Todd Gurley would be on pace for 1,500, 1,600 yards too. So.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think the fact of the matter is that Todd Gurley is suffering from a really bad offense too. I mean, if they can stack eight in the box over and over again, then it basically removes any ability for him to break any big plays. And, you know, it's kind of weird because, you know, last year, what they had? They had Austin Davis and Nick Foles at quarterback. It wasn't like they are anything to write home about, but they were certainly professional NFL quarterbacks, whereas the combination they've had this year has been, they have Case Keenum, which is just, he's really just not even a placeholder, and Jared Goff was a huge miss at this point. I still think that there's hope for Jared Goff, honestly. I mean, what we saw in college, I think, will take some time to translate. He was oftentimes playing out of shotgun and playing in a wide-open West Coast offense. So I think that there's going to be some transition time required, and he's going to need better support in out of the backfield and along the line and from his receivers. And as you say, Tava, you know, the what they have there right now, Tavon Austin, Kenny Britt, that's not really going to do it going forward. So certainly I think some changes there will help. I actually think Jared Goff, you got to give him at least another year in order to see what you got there. I mean, they traded away a lot to get him, and I still think there's hope. So I would kind of stand fast on that. Let me turn to the other side of the ball for a second and talk about Taylor Gabriel. Another lightning play by him of a long 64-yard touchdown. But tell me, what do you think about Taylor Gabriel? I kind of feel like at this point that if Julio Jones is healthy, then I want to play two receiver sets of Julio Jones and Taylor Gabriel and not Mohamed Sanu. And I don't even care about the rest of these guys. But what do you think about Taylor Gabriel? What do you think about elevating him to being a wide receiver two in Atlanta's offense?
I would absolutely consider it right now. I think he's shown enough explosiveness and playmaking that I think he's just earned that right. And then, you know, and the fact of the matter is if you have him and Julio and you have Sanu out there as your third option, when you have three wide receiver sets, then I think they're in pretty good shape until Matt Ryan starts forcing the ball into double coverage, which inevitably will happen in the playoffs.
Right, absolutely. We will look forward to this implosion that will occur sometime in the near future, and I agree with you. It will certainly occur in the near future. All right. So let's go ahead to the next game because I know we want to cover a couple more. And that's the Denver Broncos at the Tennessee Titans. Denver Broncos now 8-5 after this loss to the Tennessee Titans. They are 7-6. A 10-13 game. It was a defensive battle pretty much all the way around. Not much offense to get excited about. But there was some plays made. Emmanuel Sanders looked pretty good. And Demaryius Thomas actually, when he had room to maneuver, looked pretty good. So let me ask you about that. So Denver Broncos, what do you think is going on with the Denver Broncos? Do you think they actually can still turn their season? 8-5 is not a bad record. They can certainly still build on that, but what do you think their chances are? Ryan, still there?
Oh, hey, sorry, I muted it.
I was going to say that was the quickest analysis I've ever heard. He's just absolutely fed up with them and doesn't think they can go anywhere. That's it. Hashtag analysis. Denver Broncos are terrible, according to Ryan Whitfield. All right, go ahead. How do you feel about Denver?
Yeah, so I think they're absolutely, I think there's a good chance to miss the postseason. I think we talked about this earlier this year. They definitely miss, as bad as Peyton was at throwing the ball, someone who can check them into the right plays. They miss C.J. Anderson right now. They can't run the ball. I think they ran it for 18 yards on Sunday against Tennessee. And I think they're kind of seeing a similar thing of teams saying, okay, run the ball, because I'm not scared of Trevor Siemian. And so I think they're stacking the box there on them. And then on the defensive side, you know, there's I reference him a lot. I listen to Mike Felger of the Sports Hub here in Boston a lot. And he's kind of the contrarian around here. And he constantly pounds his chest about how there's not just one way to build a team, that the Patriot way is not the only way, and that you can spend big on free agents and it doesn't hurt you and you can still do it. And, you know, he cited the Ravens a couple years ago, who haven't done anything since their Super Bowl. Now he cites the Broncos and says, so you can bring in a big-name free agent and it doesn't cost you anything. And well, the fact of the matter is they don't have a good quarterback right now. I'm sorry, but in the 2 years that the Denver, I just looked it up, the 2 years that the Broncos went to the Super Bowl in 13 and 15, they had Danny Trevathan recording 109 solo tackles in 2015 and 129 tackles in 2013. You think they're missing him in the middle, helping stop the run? How about Malik Jackson? So this isn't me saying that the only way to do it is the Patriot way, but I think it's foolhardy to say that you can sustain over a long time like the Patriots have when you spend big and bring in names like DeMarcus Ware, and then you do pay Von Miller. I mean, when that happens, people start getting overly, you know, getting paid to the max like that, then you lose people. Not everybody has a Brady who will take, you know, the pay cuts he does, but so I just think that that's kind of caught up with the Broncos, and I think their 4 or 5 year peak period is in danger right now because they can't stop the run. They're 27th or 28th against the run, so they can't stop the run, and they can't run the ball, and only two offensive linemen that started last year for the Broncos are starting this year. So, again, you know my saying always is that I don't think the run game that you can win by being a run-first team, but you have to have some ability to run it and some ability to stop it if you're gonna win. And, you know, when they beat the Patriots last year, the Patriots, I think, got held to, you know, under 60 yards in the AFC Championship running the ball, and the Broncos ran for 99 yards. So they won that battle, and it was a close game, and that's the difference. And so they still have an elite pass defense, but the other three areas on offense and defense, they're subpar.
Okay, all right. So let's go ahead and actually let's mix this up a little bit because we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the running backs out there, because I know how much you love running backs, as you just say. You already mentioned that you think running backs are fantastic. They're just about as good as, say, rolling the dice or something like that, or maybe, you know, hitting the slot machine. But, like, at the end of the day, I think running backs are incredibly important. I know we can disagree, and as you say, you have to have at least some semblance of a run game in order to be successful in NFL. So, like I said, let's pick it up a little bit. Let's talk about who do you think is the best running back in the NFL today. And I know that before the show, we actually talked a little bit about this and mentioned a couple names, including Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, DeMarco Murray, Ezekiel Elliott. You also threw in LeGarrette Blount. I threw in Jordan Howard. You know, I think there's a lot of stuff there. Todd Gurley is kind of out of the conversation now, but he's someone maybe in the future who might be an issue. Let me just go ahead and throw down the numbers here. Ezekiel Elliott has the most rushing yards in the NFL right now with 1,392 yards. He has 12 total touchdowns. He's absolutely dominating. DeMarco Murray is second, 1,135 yards with 9 touchdowns. David Johnson at 1,085 at third. Le'Veon Bell, 1,053. LeGarrette Blount is there at number 5 with 1,029. Now, Jordan Howard didn't actually start for the Bears. He actually only started about 5 games in, and he already has 969 yards and 5 touchdowns himself. So there's a lot to be said about all these guys. But tell me, what do you think, Ryan? Who is the best running back in the NFL right now?
I mean, you scoffed at LeGarrette Blount, but, you know, he's number 1 in touchdowns, and he's number 5 in yards, and he's got a 4.1 yard per carry average this year. So I don't know, Kong, not much to laugh at there. But with that said, I'm obviously not picking him. I'm going to take David Johnson. And I would say that because unlike the other guys on this list, he doesn't have the benefit of either A, a dominating offensive line, or A, or B, an offense that really has kind of made him the secondary option. The all the other guys you could argue, you know, Le'Veon, I still think Pittsburgh's a pass-first team. I would say the same, obviously, about the Patriots. And then, Zeke, you have a great offensive line. I think you have a pretty good offensive line in Tennessee and some semblance of a pass game. I think the rest of the offense, I think pretty much everything in Arizona this year has been put on David Johnson's back. And the fact of the matter is every single week he pretty much steps up to the plate and delivers. If they didn't have him, they might be a one-win, two-win team this year because he has single-handedly carried that offense, and that defense hasn't been great this year either. So from that standpoint, you know, the argument always comes down to, you know, how you say who's the best. Do you value stats or do you value, production or do you value kind of the circumstance? And for me, I look at the circumstance and say, who has the most on their shoulders and who's performing under that. And for me, it's David Johnson.
Yeah, you know, I can buy onto that. I think David Johnson is in the top two. I actually am going to go with Le'Veon Bell, and the reason why I say that is because he is so dangerous, both on the ground and through the air. And what happens is when Ben Roethlisberger goes into a shell, which he does often when he's on the road, Le'Veon Bell basically just carries the entire load himself as well, and he can switch it on, switch it off. He's the consummate role player, I think. Whatever you need him to do, he can do. And, of course, there are a lot of other superstars on the team. Antonio Brown, obviously, is incredible, probably one of the best top two or three wide receivers in NFL today. But I really do feel that Le'Veon Bell is one of those guys who's proven it in a couple years now and continues to prove it. And to your point, I don't think Pittsburgh is that good of a team. I really think that Pittsburgh is just kind of opportunistic. They have had some good matchups. I don't think they're that good of a team, but I do think that Le'Veon Bell is a really good running back that can really answer the call, answer the bell, no pun intended, I guess, or actually pun intended, whenever he needs to. You know, he can do it from as a passing down back, he can do it as a short yardage back, he can do it basically as his own change of pace, and I think that's very, very valuable. Looking at Football Outsiders, by the way, they disagree with both of us. They have Ezekiel Elliott as number one, have a DYAR score of 344, which is a measure of how good a running back is in total value to this point of the season so far. And just for your reference, they have LeSean McCoy second, Carlos Hyde third, Le'Veon Bell fourth. Your boy David Johnson actually shows up down at number 12, but I think that's when stats start to get a little hazy, I think. That's when you can say, well, stats can mean anything you want it to mean. I think there's a lot there for all these guys, and I certainly would agree that David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, and Le'Veon Bell are the top three right now.
I completely agree.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to finish my point that Le'Veon Bell was a second-round pick by Pittsburgh. David Johnson, I believe, was a fourth-round pick. And just, you know, solidifies my driven agenda here that you don't draft running backs in the first round. And when both those guys come up for contracts, if Pittsburgh and Arizona are smart, they're saying, see you later. Go sign the big money somewhere else. We'll go draft somebody else in the second to fourth round.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that is a really good point, because Ezekiel Elliott is a little bit of a interesting guy because of the fact that they had such a dominant offensive line there. They gave him every opportunity to succeed, so he didn't have to worry about growing pains. And I think that's the major difference between him and anybody else that you might want to take in the draft and any other team that you might want to get to, is the fact that they just don't have the type of support that you would have in Dallas when it comes to being a new running back in the NFL. All right, so that's it for that segment. Let's quickly turn, because we only got about 10 minutes left here. We want to turn to fantasy football for a little bit here. So, again, we're going to mix it up, and I'm going to go ahead and get us a little bit of background music here because I like it. It's really kind of catchy. All right, let's talk about some fantasy football, shall we? And let's talk about, in particular, some fantasy football pickups. So I'm going to name off a couple guys here, give you a little bit of background on what I think, and then, Ryan, you chime in. You let me know what you think about these guys as a viable pickup in fantasy football, because if you're listening to this right now, you are in your fantasy football playoffs, and you don't want to take a lot of chances, but you might need to fill some of those holes because of all the injuries. First guy I got up is Bilal Powell, running back of the New York Jets, 45% owned in the standard Yahoo leagues. He's actually been pretty solid all year round and just kind of a contributor in the background, Matt Forte being the big name there. But Forte had a knee injury about three carries into that game last week, was out of the game, and Powell took over, rushed 29 times for 145 yards and two touchdowns, one of which was the game winner in overtime. So, tell me, what do you think about Bilal Powell? If Matt Forte doesn't play this week, do you like him as a pickup in fantasy football and potentially as a play if you're desperate at running back?
Yeah, I like him. I thought he's not just this year has been serviceable. I always liked his skill set, and I thought the Jets were going to make the right move when Chris Ivory wanted big money to let him walk and elevate Bilal Powell to the starter, but then they decided to be the typical Jets and go sign an old, over-the-hill, big-name guy. So I absolutely
there's
I don't
a
think last week is a fluke.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't think he's a fluke. No. So I think Bilal Powell is probably the best set of the guys we're going to go through today, value-wise, you can get this late in the season.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And actually, Matt Forte said after the game that he heard some cracking and popping in his knee. Obviously, that's a problem. Like I said before, I'm no doctor, but cracking and popping in your knee is not a good thing. So we'll see how it goes. He didn't practice. It's unlikely he's going to start. And if so, I think there's some value there. So let's go on to the next one. That's Kenneth Farrow of the San Diego Chargers, running back, 3% owned in standard Yahoo leagues. He's an undrafted free agent out of Houston. Really had a little bit of hype in the preseason, but Melvin Gordon really kind of stole the show because he was supposed to have a breakout year, and he did after they managed to get his buddy, Derek Watt, J.J. Watt's brother, out there to block for him as a fullback. Melvin Gordon went hog wild, but then 3 yards short of a 1,000-yard season, he injures his hip trying to recover a fumble from Phillip Rivers. Of course, Phillip Rivers hurting his team again, this time in another way. So up steps Kenneth Farrow. He rushes 16 times for 55 yards, adds 6 receptions for 23 receiving yards. Looked pretty solid to me. What do you think about Kenneth Farrow if Melvin Gordon is out this week?
Yeah, if he's out, I play him. It's worth a play for somehow against all odds with all the injuries this year. Whoever they've seemed to plug in there has seemed to work, and you know, from Inman on down. So, I'd give him a start. If you're hurting at running back or at a flex option, you know, depending on how hurt your roster is, he's definitely worth a look.
Yeah, I think for Melvin Gordon owners, I'm with you. I would try to get Bilal Powell if he's out there, but you know, like I said, he's 45% owned, so I'm sure that he's not available in most of the most competitive leagues out there. And it depends, as you say, as how shallow your league is. If you're in a 12-team league, maybe you have a shot. But if you're in a 14-team or deeper, you're unlikely to have Bilal Powell on the waiver. And I don't think Kevin Farrow is a bad play. I actually think he could be significant, and particularly in PPR, because he does catch a number of passes. So let's talk about Dwayne Washington, running back out of Detroit Lions, 4% owned. Now, it's interesting because here Theo Riddick was scratched at the last second. So for all you poor saps who are trying to play Theo Riddick, you should have known better. You should have taken him out before the game actually started. But he was scratched at the last minute and with wrist and ankle injuries. And Dwayne Washington stepped in. Now, Zenner also played but was out in a concussion. So basically the entire backfield belonged to Dwayne Washington. Rushed 16 times for 64 yards, caught one of his targets for 10 yards. He looked okay. I mean, he had a little bit of an injury scare in the fourth quarter, came back, looked okay. What do you think about Dwayne Washington this week if Theo Riddick and Zenner are out?
Yeah, if they're both out again. Again, kind of the same thing as Kenneth Farrow. I mean, if you're in a deep league and you're really looking for some help, and there's just not a lot of great names out there, he's definitely somebody to consider. But you know, I don't know. If you're relying on him, then I don't have great hopes for your playoff hopes this week.
Right. No, I totally agree with you there. But you know, like I said, you could do worse. I would hope that you have a backup running back you could play with and put him in your flex, but you could do worse, I think, there. Now, the next guy I want to talk about, which I think is incredibly interesting, Robbie Anderson, a great name to put into your memory banks as a potential dynasty guy. He actually is very impressive in the preseason and actually did a lot of stuff there. He is Bryce Petty's new favorite target, and Bryce Petty, of course, is now the starting quarterback for your New York Jets. He, in week 13, reeled in 4 receptions for 61 yards and a touchdown, all of which came from Petty when he took over for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Petty targeted Anderson a whopping 12 times in less than half a game. And now, in his first full game, he managed to get targeted 11 times, caught 6 of them, 99 yards, and he also rushed for 12 yards. I mean, this guy pretty much does it all with the new Bryce Petty era for as long as that will last in New York. What do you think about Robbie Anderson as a fantasy football pickup and a play this week?
Love it. I think he's shown some spark, and I think the best tidbit I can give to anybody out there is that the Jets have a favorable championship week match for you. The Jets are playing the Patriots. The Patriots give up a lot of yards typically, so he might not catch a touchdown, but the Pats will give him the underneath stuff, so if he's the safety blanket for Bryce Petty, then he's going to get a lot of targets and, you know, get a lot of catches. So especially in a PPR league, he's going to be great for you next week.
Yeah, and I love him for DFS, too. If you guys play FanDuel, DraftKings, Yahoo Daily Fantasy, any of that stuff, Robbie Anderson is cheap and productive, particularly in DraftKings where it's a full PPR. So I love me some Robbie Anderson. He is very, very impressive. He's done an incredible job so far, and Bryce Petty is really not that good, yet Robbie Anderson, just sheer volume, is going to get you what you need in your fantasy league. So if you're really hurting at the flex, wide receiver 3, 12-team leagues or deeper, he's only 2% owned so far. He's growing, though. It's growing. So you want to get on that right away if you need the wide receiver. Let me talk about one more wide receiver, and that's Alshon Jeffrey of the Chicago Bears. You know, everyone knows about him. He was one of the top wide receiver drafted this year, but he's been pretty ineffective and has been injured, and now he was suspended for 4 games. He's back. He's back, and he's receiving passes from Matt Barkley. What do you think? Alshon Jeffrey, is he worth picking up? Is he worth playing, perchance, if you're in the fantasy football playoffs?
Alshon Jeffrey was, you know, for most of the year, at least in one of my leagues, was a solid double-digit player every week. He never really had a massive game this year, but he was solidly, you know, putting up 10 to 20 points a week. With that said, I was in that league, which was a money league. I was 7-2 with him, and then I went 1-3 without him, and actually got bounced in the first round of the playoffs. So Alshon Jeffrey's
wow.
Pound sand, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, I can say this: I don't like the fact that we haven't seen what he can do with Matt Barkley. I mean, at least we haven't seen what he can do in a full game with Matt Barkley. It's clear that Barkley likes to spread it around. We initially thought it was Marcus Wilson, then we thought maybe it's Cameron Meredith, then we thought maybe it was Josh Bellamy, and it's on and on and on. Yeah, sure, maybe he'll try to force a couple extra to Alshon Jeffrey, but it's clear he doesn't fear throwing it to everybody else on the roster, including those that we don't know the name of. So I wouldn't feel comfortable playing him this week. I do suggest, though, if you have bench space, stashing him in all leagues and seeing how he does, because who knows, maybe he has a good connection with our buddy Matt Barkley over in Chicago. Any other waiver wire pickups or tips and tricks you want to bring up before we sign off, Ryan?
You know, I lost in my knockout pool last week, and I lost all three of my fantasy playoff matchups. So at this point,
so good matchups are hard to find, but you definitely keep an eye out for that for fantasy football purposes. And I actually keep an eye on kickers as well, because domed kickers will have a much better chance of not missing those crucial long field goals that could help you get past your fantasy football playoffs and into your championship game. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. And until next time, enjoy your football week, and we'll see you next week with more Football Garbage Time NFL podcasts.